Sins. Okay. Or he who, after confessing his crime in an assembly of the gods of the earth, Brahmanas, and the gods of men, Kshatriyas, bathes with the priests at the close of a sacrifice, is freed from guilt. The Brahman is, but notice here is who he's confessing in front of, right? Means your good quality Brahmins, good quality Kshatriyas, because they actually understand what's happening, why things can happen, all these different things. So then, in a sacrifice, because at the sacrifice is one, there's going to be times when you can discuss, and then bathing at the end of the sacrifice. So one would give the indication that one has been there before the end of the sacrifice. It's not saying at the end of the sacrifice if you come and then you confess your crime in front of such and such. It's saying in the assembly of, and then bathe with them at the end, because you always bathe at the end. Right, so then that means this, and these sacrifices go on for some time. So, what's the real point here, right? Because in these sacrifices, what they're doing means, in other words, when the yajna is going on, it's not that you stand up and say, I'm a sinner and this and that. No, it's in between the different ceremonies, like that. There are times when they discuss the philosophy, shastras, and all these different things. So much of the discussions that we have in Shastra on philosophy, many of them are at a sacrifice, like Bhagavatam is there, the Puranas are there. They're doing the yajna, so when are they speaking? When is Sutta speaking the Bhagavatam? I mean, Sukadev to Parikshit Maharaj, that's not at a sacrifice. But Sutta with the sages at Naimisharanya, that's at their, 1,000 year sacrifice. So that means in the morning and evening they're definitely doing so. Whether they're doing anything at noon, that's another thing. But that means in the morning, and then after that there's discussions then in the afternoon, or they do the yajna and then in the evening. Does that make sense? So that's how it, so the idea is that you have all these great personalities there. So all these great personalities, they're discussing philosophy, they're discussing Shastra. Right? So that means you're sitting with them. You know, in sadhu sangha, you're hearing philosophy like that, and taking your bath at the end of the yajna means that bath doesn't mean they all go, to their places. They go to the sacred place, bathe with their clothes on. It means whatever they were wearing at the time, at the end of the sacrifice, they wear that, go down and bathe. So that is the, you understand the principle that's going on there? It's not a ritualistic thing. In other words, we'll see as we go through here that the actual real most powerful form of purification is association and hearing and chanting. Others actually are only there because of the social situation. Because people know about it, so therefore, unless it's at a certain level, means whatever is the level of the crime, it has to be something that matches that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise people won't think anything happened, right? But as pointed out by Sukadev Goswami, that prayaschitta is like the elephant taking bath. It goes in, it takes bath, it loves to take a bath, and be nice and clean. Soon as it comes out of the water, it picks up dirt and throws it on itself. I don't know, have you seen it here? You watch the elephant do that? That's what they always do. It's just like them. They love being in the water. But as soon as they get out, they throw dirt all over themselves. You know? So it said prayaschitta is like that. It doesn't actually do anything. Because the point is that commitment that I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, this was wrong and I'm not going to do it anymore. That's actually what you're trying to obtain. You know? But not just for the moment, but that commitment that this is what you're going to do. So that's actually what corrects the living entity, not the prayaschitta. But because of the element of karma, we think, I do karma, I get results, so therefore I'm purified because of the activity I do. Right? But the point is, why are you doing the karmakanda yajna in the first place?
For a result?
Yeah, because you have material desire. So it's the material desire that's actually the active principle. Then, because it's something like that, then means you want that kind of external result, you have to do an external activity. But the point is the actual, what you're trying to do in purification is not external. It's within the mind, the consciousness, that this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. I shouldn't do this. I'll not do this anymore. So there's no external activity you can do to produce that. Right? But just like we were saying with anything, is by doing it by that association, then it awakens that idea. Because some people do the prayaschitta and never come to that kind of conclusion. Others, without doing the prayaschitta, they've always come to that conclusion, right? So, technically, the person who understands it doesn't need to do the prayaschitta. But if he didn't, the common person would get confused. Because they think it's the prayaschitta that purified him. Because he went to the forest for 12 years and lived under a tree there, that's why he's purified. No, it's sitting there and contemplating, you know, that this is stupid. That's what purifies. Is that, yes?
That social aspect, is that why there's a distinction made in this chapter between
known and unknown?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sins that are public and sins that are secret.
Yeah, anything that's public, then there's something external that goes on. Things that are not known, only you know about them, you know, or you don't know about them. It's just, you know, it's just like you see you're having so many obstacles and this and that and anything you do, it just doesn't work normally. Everyone else is working normally. Why would that be? From previous sin. So you don't even know about it, what it is, but if you hear and chant, it will purify it. Or if you've done something you know about, no one else knows about, the actual purification is increasing your hearing, chantings, and association with devotees. That's the only thing that works. Right, but just like if you do the karmakanda yajna, you get the fruit of results, you know, and by what we would call socially good stuff, you get that. But are you actually going to be happy? No. So therefore, if the pious side of it doesn't give you any satisfaction or actually do anything, why should the impious side of it? You know what I'm saying? Prayaschitta works like a charm, but you know the other thing doesn't. So we don't have faith in karmakanda that you'll do it. It's temporary, it doesn't give any real results. Why would we have faith in the karmakanda prayaschitta? Does that make sense? So that's the point. So it's hearing and chanting is the real thing. So here what really works is the association. So this is the high end of it. Right? Like that, because there's all kinds of other wild stuff. The Brahman is declared to be the root of the sacred law, and the Kshatriya its top. Hence he who has confessed his sin before an assembly of such men becomes pure. Because sacred law itself, or Dharma itself, is being maintained by these two. Right? So then if they are comfortable, then you're purified. By his origin alone, a Brahman is a deity, even for the gods, and his teaching is authoritative for men, because the Veda is the foundation for that. The teaching of the Brahman, why he's the leader of society, because his lifestyle and teaching is the Veda. That's why it is, not just because, you know, he was born in that family, so therefore he happens to be the head honcho. You know, it's got to be that there's a reason. So that reason is because of the Veda. If only three of them who are learned in the Veda proclaim the expiation for offenses, that shall purify the sinners, for the words of learned men are a means of purification. Right? So even if it's small, even if there's just three Brahmins, that will do it. You don't even need the whole assembly. Because when we say an assembly here, when he says horse sacrifice, you're talking about, like, well, I'm not sure about horse, but Soma Yagya, there's 90 Brahmins. Right? And we don't hear that because, you know, it's a common thing, but it's not that big. Horse sacrifice, now that's big. So there may be more, but at least like that kind of Brahmins. Right? Then you're going to have the kings. You know, all the Kshatriyas who are present at that sacrifice. So, you know, you could be talking minimum 100, if not, you know, 150, 200 qualified people. But it's saying here, even if only three learned Brahmins, right? They hear and then they say, okay, this is what to do. Then you're free, you're purified. Right? But it means that sincerity, because you're trying to get the change in the consciousness. It's not that you've done the ritual. Otherwise, you could say, okay, if I just go and do that, then I'm pure, right? No, it's not that. It's because in that kind of an assembly with such qualified people, generally speaking, you'd have to make it pretty sincere. Because otherwise, who's doing the yajna? Who's doing the horse sacrifice? The Brahmins or the king? Right? You come and you know, mess up his sacrifice by ruining the mood because you're there and making yourself the center of attention. The king's not going to appreciate it. Right? So you're not going to get away with not being sincere. But if it's sincere, then... Okay, then drinking liquor. Sura indeed is the dirty refuse, mala of grain. Sin is also called dirt, mala. Hence a Brahmana, Kshatriya, and a Vaishya shall not drink Sura. Right? So the whole point is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, they don't drink alcohol. They don't take intoxication. Right? In other words, Shudras shouldn't, but if they do, they're not going to lose their caste. Because if you're a Brahmin and you drink it, you drop to a Shudra. If you're Kshatriya, you drop to a Shudra. If you're Vaishya, you drop to a Shudra. You're Shudra, you take it, you still remain a Shudra. You know, so it's not, means in other words, they shouldn't, but if they do, it's not going to lessen their position. It may disturb their family situation, throw off their how well they work, so many things. It has its reaction. That's why Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas don't do it. But it won't drop them from its position. Mala means dirt. Yeah, it just means the refuse. Means mala is what's left over, what's useless for them. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Because what Sanskrit, they say things. They say them very nicely. Sura, one must know to be of three kinds. That distilled from molasses, godi, that would be known as rum, right? That distilled from grain, paisti, so that's all your, like, whiskeys and bourbon, and I think even your vodka and stuff like that, all these, like, heavy stuff. And that distilled from grapes, madvi, your wines. So in other words, your hard liquor, your medium hard liquor, and your, you know, soft liquor. Yeah, you know, it's just regular old jazz. As the one named above, even so are all three sorts forbidden to the chief of the twice born. So it's not that, okay, well, this one, but what about those ones? It just means that.
New.
Riti. In modern, okay, rum is distilled from molasses, godi, whiskey, and the like are distilled from grain, and wine is distilled from grapes. Sura, all other intoxicating drinks and decoctions, and flesh are the food of the yakshas, rakshasas, and paisachas. A Brahmin who eats the remnants of the offerings consecrated to the gods must not partake of such substances. Right? So the idea is, it says sura and other intoxicating drinks. So in other words, anything that creates intoxication, that's not taken. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not, okay, not alcohol, you know, we could take other things. You know, crystal meth is all right. Maha crystal meth. Means, but who would you offer it to? Because you would have to offer it to, here, as mentioned, a yaksha, a rakshasa, or a paisach. You understand what paisaches are? Yes. Various kinds of ghosts. You know what I'm saying? When they actually offer flesh and stuff to, like, Kali or Shiva, because they're Vaishnavas, they don't eat it. They give it to their ghost associates. They eat it. Right? They like it, you know. So actually, though, they're taking, when they say they're taking remnants of Shiva or Parvati, they're not. They're taking the remnants of the ghost. Because, you know, just they don't eat it. Demigods don't eat this stuff. Demigods don't eat meat. Right? They couldn't. That was the whole thing when Urvasi came and lived with the king. Then she made the point that, you know, I only eat things cooked in ghee, right? No oil, none of this kind of jazz. You know, so it's good quality food, that's what we're eating.
Does that mean that those who partake of that develop the qualities of those?
Yeah, of course. They develop that kind of ghostly kind of thing. Mm. You're taking their remnants.
So what is a decoction?
Decoction would be, what would be a decoction, sir? I'm sorry. Decoction generally means you kind of like put things together or soak it, or it's, you know, any kind of...
Extract the essence of the liquid.
Yeah. Like you take something, put it in there, and then extract it out, and things like that.
I heard there was one drink that they collect all the insects, and then they collect them, and then whenever that...
There's a lot of interesting decoctions, yeah, so that would probably come, that would also be one of these. You can take that off the list, right? You know, like that. What if it's not just bugs, you know? Yeah.
The yada was drinking some medication.
And how did that work out for them? No, but how did it work out? You're not answering the question. The Yadavas were drinking alcohol. What happened?
It's prohibited.
No. What happened to them?
They killed each other.
Right. That's why they shouldn't be taking it.
But anyways, there's some kind of sacrifice designated.
No, they were just drinking alcohol. There is no Vedic sacrifice that's on the white side that you use alcohol in. Anything that uses alcohol, if it's any kind of ritual, it's on the left side. It's not white. It's always black arts. It's not right side. It's always left. Alcohol's not part of it. You know what I mean? You know, it means, in other words, if there's a lot of columns and the ceiling's very high and the guy down at the end is doing a thing with wine and stuff like that, that happens. But in the Vedic things, they don't use it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's just not used. So you're not supposed to take it. The Kshatriyas, if they might take it, it's no big deal. The Vaishyas take it. The Brahmins specifically would stay away from it. Because before, it was allowed. It's one of those things that would go on. But in the very beginning of the creation, so because it creates trouble, then there's always somebody that then makes a stipulation that it's not allowed. Does that make sense? A Brahmin stupefied by drunkenness might fall on something impure or improperly pronounce Vedic texts, or commit some other act which ought not to be committed. Right? So because of that, that would happen to Sukracharya. So he made the curse that Brahmins can't take alcohol. Right? So it means Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas shouldn't take it. But specifically the Brahmins, they're you know, like forbidden. The Kshatriyas and that, they shouldn't take it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. If they want to maintain, you know, the proper position. It says that Brahma, Kshatriya, and Vaishya shall not drink. But it's not like specifically. It's like if they do it, it's in their control and careful, then it's not so bad. You know what I'm saying? But so you'll see it, sometimes you see it happening in the histories. But the Brahmins, you basically don't see it happening. Like that. Because they're more careful about it. But the point is that when we were discussing before the other things, is that it shouldn't be taken, intoxication one, because all these will distract from your duty, so the king shouldn't be taking it. Does that make sense? Yeah. When the Brahman, the Veda, which dwells in his body is even once only deluged with spiritus liquor. His Brahmanhood forsakes him and he becomes a Shudra. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the problem why Brahmins avoid such a mm-hmm. thing. It means you can drink it if you want, you just become a Shudra. Like that. Okay. 98, 99. Okay, 99. Those who know the Veda declare that a voluntary effusion of semen by a twice-born youth who fulfills his vow of studentship constitutes a breach of that vow. The divine light which the Veda imparts to the student enters. If he breaks his vow, the Maruts, Puruhuta, Indra, the teacher of the gods, Brihaspati, and Pavaka, fire. Okay, 201. Sexual intercourse with sisters by the same mother, with the wives of a friend or of son, or with married, unmarried maidens, and with females of the lowest castes. The daughter of his father's sister, who is almost equal to a sister, the daughter of his mother's sister, or his mother's full brother. A wise man should not take his wife any of these three. They must not be wedded because they are Sapinda relatives. He who marries one of them sinks low. Right? These three should not be married. The daughters of one's paternal aunt, maternal aunt, or maternal uncle. Right? So here is that there is, what is it on this one side? Paternal aunt, maternal aunt, or maternal uncle. But it doesn't say paternal uncle. Because there's one of them that it's generally not used, but in the South, and that one particular one, that cousin, you know, it's a first cousin, but that one particular first cousin, the nature is the same between yourself and them as between the grandparents. In other words, the same nature, because from the grandmother, that goes into the into the son, right? And from the grandfather, that goes into the daughter. And then that when that moves over like this, it comes back again. So you actually have the same nature. So generally north they don't use it, but in south, in some communities, then if they're born like that, then it's understood that they're destined to get married. Those two, and only if they say themselves that no, we'll marry someone else. But otherwise, it's automatic that they'll get married. Like that. From what I understand, then, who was it? You have a few examples of that. Yeah, I think it means Arjuna and Subhadra. Like that. Because because Krishna is his cousin. So that makes Subhadra his cousin. Like that. That's one example. I think there's one more. But it's not a common thing like that. So in other words, the normal thing is first cousins are never married like that. Okay, an unnatural crime with a female, intercourse in water, or intercourse with a menstruating woman. Intercourse with a female in a cart drawn by oxen, in water, or in the daytime. In other words, not in a moving vehicle. Right. But now, does that mean in the back of the vehicle? And it says drawn by oxen, so that's, you know, like that. If you cut out that, that's a lot of kids.
I don't know whether we're meant to have the next part also in larger font. Does it give the description for all of those things?
No, it's just here is just, in other words, it was put there just, this is what you don't do. Because otherwise, the next part that makes it that, you know, hey, it's no big deal. Yes.
Unnatural crime. What is? I mean,
unnatural means something that's not natural.
What is a natural crime?
There's a vritti there. I was just thinking that here's a guy from Denmark, and he's asking what an unnatural crime of a woman is. You know, that's like a guy from Africa asking what a zebra is or something.
Yeah. There are reasons I didn't function well in Denmark.
Oh, okay. Then that's okay. As long as it's, you don't fit in there, then okay. Okay. 202. The sin which a twice-born man commits by dallying one night with a Vrish. By dwelling one night with a Vrishali. So Vrishali is specifically defined as a Chandala, Shudra, or even lower class woman. It also refers to an unmarried young girl in her menses, an old woman beyond childbearing age, or a married woman in her menses. Right, so in other words, yeah. But this one, you see, somehow or another, it takes a little longer to get rid of. This one, it takes much longer. Associating with outcasts. Let him not transact any business with unpurified sinners. But let him in no way reproach those who have made atonement. Right? That's very important. It means those who are in the process of purifying themselves, you don't associate with them because they're not functioning in the social system. But anybody who has purified himself, then it's not referred to that, oh, before you were like this. You can't do that. Otherwise, what's the meaning of atonement? Because if you say, you know, if you refer to that, then it means the atonement didn't do anything. Right? So, you know, then why should people be doing atonement if people are going to complain about it? Let him not dwell together with the murderers of children, with those who have returned evil for good, and with the slayers of supplicants for protection, or of women, though they may have been purified according to the law. Right, so now, this particular group of persons, then even they've done the penances, you don't associate with them. Right? It means something, maybe, but you don't dwell with them, you don't spend time with them. Right? You may have some interaction or something, business or this on the street, but you don't take up residence with them. Because the problem is these kind of things are really deep. You know, the others are more normal. Some gold's there, the guy steals it, or, you know, things like that. But killing women, killing children, killing those who come to you for protection, right? You know, those who do good for you and you behave badly with them. It's just, there's something wrong in the consciousness there, so you just avoid them. Okay, 2, 1, 3. He who has said, hum, to a brahmana, or has addressed one of his betters with thou shalt, with thou, shall bathe, fast during the remaining part of the day, and appease the person offended by a reverential salutation. In other words, someone who's superior to you, you just don't use strong language or pointed language to. He who has struck a Brahmin, even with a blade of grass, tied him by the neck with a cloth, or conquered him within an altercation, shall appease him by a prostration. Right? In other words, the first one is that you just didn't speak right, then by a salutation. If then has been something more physical, you know, actually physical, then with, you know, a full dandavat. But he who intending to hurt a Brahmin has threatened him with a stick and the like shall remain in hell during 100 years. He who actually struck him during 1,000 years. Right? If you just threatened to do harm 100 years, you actually did 1,000 years. As many particles of dust as the blood of a Brahmin causes to coagulate, for so many thousand years he shall the shedder of that blood remain in hell. Right. So in other words, he struck him, then it's 1,000 years. You drew blood, then it's how much drop of blood when it hits the ground, how many dust particles there are, that's how many thousand years. One dust particle, 1,000 years. It's a long time, you know. If you hit it really good, you know, you could be there a real long time. In other words, don't hit Brahmas.
that's the purport.
Yeah, that's the purport. Like, that's why it says again and again that the Kshatriyas, they don't tax, they don't punish, they just don't do any of these things with Brahmas. You just, you know, like that. It's in no way do they deal roughly with them like that. You know, if the guy is a problem, send them out of your kingdom. With all this stuff, don't take anything, right? Other people, you confiscate, it means the minister or a superintendent has been cheating the people, you take all his property. But Brahmins, even they've done wrong, you don't take the property. You just don't do that. You don't physically punish them, you don't take their money. You know? So it's just, in other words, Yeah, Brahmins are to be respected. But if it's something that it doesn't work in your place, send them somewhere else. You know, yes.
Does that mean that some ministers may not be Brahmins?
Well, there's, excuse me, I shouldn't have said minister. I should have said, I meant superintendents.
Okay.
Like that. Because it means the minister is there. They should be Brahmins or somebody very highly qualified. But then under them, you're going to have all these superintendents that take care of specific areas of the kingdom. And then you have those people who take care of cities and towns and villages and stuff like that. So any of those, you always have to watch, because they may always try to cheat the people and take advantage. So if they do, you just take everything away from them, and their, you know, the post and all their possessions. Because basically the possessions are gained by cheating the people.
You know? Very strong example.
Yeah, and then people just know you don't do that. One, the people be satisfied because, you know, they felt they were being cheated. And two is, like you said, it doesn't work out, so. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's now the person's caught, he's, you know, doing this and that, he's removed from his post. But it's not necessarily anything's taken away. But here it's that it's taken away, then people will think, well, I don't even try. Because right? Here it's like you may get away with it. You know, if nothing, you lose your position, but you still have the benefits. But here it's you lose the position and the benefits, so you just don't try. Okay, 203, 204. Okay, other activities that accompany the performance of penances. Further oblations accompanied by the recitation of the Mahavyaratis must daily be made by the penitent himself, and he must be non-violent. Speak truth and be free from anger and dishonesty. Let him be chaste and observe the vows of a student and worship his gurus, the gods, and the brahmanas. Right. So the duties of the brahmacharya means, you know, studying of shastra, brahmacharya, cleanliness, respect of authority, you know, these kind of things. Because those are how you establish yourself properly. Right? In other words, these are the things that actually make it work. Because the other thing is, you know, you're just sitting there under a tree, or, you know, you're walking the full length of the Ganga, right? Means both ways. Means you start here, your village is here. You've done something wrong. You walk from whichever side of the Ganga you're living on, right? Of course, you live on the side of the Ganga. Then you walk all the way down until you get to the Bay of Bengal, right? Then you cross to the other side, walk all the way back up to the Gangotri. Then walk back down your side until you get back to your village. So that takes about 12 years. Right? Because you just walk and you beg on the way. So also you should be doing these other kinds of stuff. Right? Because otherwise, just, you know, it means, because you're next to the Ganga, so you're always going to be seeing the Ganga, bathing the Ganga. You know, that's where also your people are going to be. There's things going on, sacred places. You know, there's association, there's kirtans, there's lectures, so you're going to get all these kind of benefits. So that's, again, the kind of thing that's... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in other words, you know, without doing the walking, you just should focus on those elements. Let him constantly mutter the Savitri and other purificatory texts according to his ability. Savitri means Gayatri. By these expiations, twice born men must be purified, those sins that are known. But let him purify those sins. So it seems to be missing a few of that, right? But let him purify those sins are not known. But let him purify those whose sins are not known by the recitation of sacred texts and by the performance of burnt oblations. So in other words, by sacrifice and by studying and reciting the scriptures, that's actually how you're going to purify yourself. Right? That's the recommendation. Because if something's known, then these other things will be applied. But if they're not known, then this is actually how you're going to get purified. Freedom from guilt. By confession, by repentance, by austerity, and by reciting the Veda, a sinner is freed from guilt. And in case no other course is possible, by liberality, by charity. If you can't do other things, then charity will work. But these others are considered to be more important. In proportion as a man who has done wrong himself confesses it, even so far he is freed from guilt, as a snake from its slough. In proportion as his heart loathes his evil deed, even so far his body is free from that guilt. So, in other words, you feel that that is wrong to that degree, then you're purified of that. He who has committed a sin and has repented is free from that sin. But he is purified only by the resolution of ceasing to sin and thinking, I will do so no more. In other words, the reaction of the sin, he won't get to that by actually repenting. Mm. But the point of being purified is that I won't do this anymore.
Yeah.
You understand? So there's a slight difference. So that's what you're trying to obtain. Mm. Yeah. That's why it's saying that by studying the scriptures, by doing sacrifice, these things, those are the real points that are, because with those, then much more you would be repentant, you're this and that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's your main elements, how one's purified. Yes.
And this can be done by anyone.
It can be done by anyone.
Any varna.
But specifically this is means it'll be the most prominent from Brahmins.
Yes.
But if properly trained Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, it'll also work, right? Shudras, it'll work if they're devotees. Because then you have the Brahminical understanding, the Brahminical culture. But if they don't, then generally this doesn't work. They need the external. Because otherwise, then, you know, if it's something light, then, you know, it's no big deal. Does that make sense? You know,
so it can be very quick. For example, for freedom for guilt confession, only one time.
Yes, but as we mentioned before, is that confession, then that's done in this assembly that's at a yajna. So generally, you would be involved with them, and because it says you have to bathe with them at the end of the yajna. It's not that you walk in, confess, and then go out and do whatever you want. It means you go in there and you stay at the sacrifice and attend the programs, and attend the lectures that are going on in the sadhu sangha. Does that make sense? Hearing the recitation of mantras and all that. Then at the end, so in other words, you're involved in sadhu sangha, hearing of the scriptures, you're doing spiritual activities. Yeah. Does that make sense? So this is the only thing that actually purifies. So as devotees, then this is what we would use. Right? That's why all these others are in the small print, because we just won't use them. Having thus considered in his mind what results will arise from his deeds after death, let him always be good in thought, speech, and actions. Right. So that's the thoughtful person should think, like, if I'm going to do something, right? Because it mentioned before, you're going to be successful by contemplating, you know, what I do, what results I'll get, and what I've done in the past, what results I have now. That person will be successful. So here, having considered in his mind what results will arise from his deeds after death, and let him always be good in thought, speech, and actions. He who, having either unintentionally or intentionally committed a reprehensible deed, desired to be freed from the guilt, on it, must not commit a second time. In other words, you do it, then don't do it again. Otherwise, it then becomes a problem. Austerity, performing one's prescribed duties, is the root of all perfection, right? So, performing one's prescribed duties, that's austerity. So whenever it says austerity, it doesn't mean going standing on your head or something. It means performing your prescribed duties, right? It means something is austere, or you can perform penances and austerity. So for the sages, you know, that are living as vanaprastas, then they do stuff like that. For the brahmachari, he's living very austerely, because that's his duty. Right, it's his prescribed duty, right? So the point is the performance of prescribed duty, that's austerity. Because the thing is that sometimes it's nice to do, sometimes it's not nice to do, right? Like Prabhupada gives the example, you're a cook. So in winter, it's nice. Everybody loves to come in the kitchen in the winter. But what about the summer, right? That's where it becomes very austere, you know? Or there's always something, you know, the cookings you like, but then people complain about it. Doesn't matter what you do, it's never the right thing. You know, you cook it this way, then everyone goes, wow, this is great, and the other guys go, wow, this is so heavy. And then you make it the other way, and the other guys go, wow, this is great, and the other guys, you know, this is, you know, where's the substance? Like that. The tell you about the one time we were cooking and it went in circle. In Calcutta Temple, they used to do, it was big life membership and everything. It's kind of like that was where it was, you know, really going very well. So they used to go out, they had breakfast at 9 in the morning, and dinner was at 9 o'clock at night. Because they go out, make members, see things like that, and then the members would come to the temple in the evening. They go to the Artik, stay for the class, and take prasad. So it was according to the members, like prasad schedule and everything like that. And it was what they would eat, puris and sabji, right? So then after the president who was organizing it like that was gone, then the next president, then you know, it was too late to eat at 9, but also then all those people weren't coming, right? So he moved it down to 5 o'clock. But then the problem was, is because it wasn't for them, and it was, you know, devotees, because they just eat little, right? And so then, you know, then it was too heavy. So it went to chapatis and sabji instead of puris and sabji, right? Then the sabji was, you know, they considered too rich and heavy and everything like that. So somehow or another, I forget how it went. It went down to something else. Somehow it got to fruit salad. Oh yeah, it was chapatis and fruit salad. Then I think it was... Then it was too heavy. So then it went down to just fruit salad. But then after some time, fruit salad, it wasn't enough there. You know, they were getting too hungry and that. So then the chapatis were put back in, right? And then that wasn't like doing it. So then they turned the chapatis into puris. Because chapatis and fruit salad isn't really a good combination. But puris and fruit salad, that works, right? So then, but then still it was too light. So then what was the next thing that was there? Puris and potato sabji, yeah, like that. This was over 1 year, so they didn't notice it. No. But being the cook, you notice it, right? But over 1 year, it went from puris and sabji down to fruit salad, back to puris and sabji. And all the time they thought that they were really doing something dynamic and like that. So, you know, being a cook drives you nuts. So therefore, postponing with prescribed duties, that's austerity. You know what I'm saying? Because everything has its good side and its bad side. So that's the point, is if you stick to your duty, you're going to get both. Now, if I'm doing other people's duties, why? What am I specifically targeting? The part I like, not the part I don't like. And because it's not my duty, I don't have to do it. I'm not obliged. So that's why one always does one's own duty, because then you get all the nice side of it, but you also get the downside. Right? Then it balances, then it's austerity. Otherwise, then you're just taking advantage and getting whatever you can. If his mind be uneasy with respect to any act, let him repeat the austerities prescribed as a penance for it until they fully satisfy his conscience. Right? As long as you're bothered, then keep doing what is purifying. Like that.
Said that we should do those which is told by the temple presidents. That means temple
presidents. Means it's by authority.
Authority.
So whatever your authority is, because some people work under the president, some people work under someone else. So the point is, it's authority.
Authority. So might be he is not assigning those duties which is my nature or person's nature to get this stuff.
So then you discuss it.
So if you ask.
The point is it means that either you do it or go to another temple where you're happy to do it. The point is keep engaged in devotional service. Right? If you really feel he doesn't that, then go somewhere else. But it may be, you know, you also have to be sure that you understand. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the basic thing is people don't like to work. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, one always has to be very careful. That there may be some, because like we said, in every duty there's something one likes and something one doesn't like. Mm-hmm. You know, like the, what do you call it? You have the element of, you know, it's great to make the money, it's not so great to have to give it away in taxes and charity. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, everything has like that. You know, the glory of the management, the position, the power, but then you got to deal with all those stupid little things that go on. Does that make sense? So, everything has its both sides. So as long as you understand what are the duties of both sides and you're comfortable with both, then that generally a good situation. So then you discuss that with the authority. Because it's not that many actually are aware or understand. So it's something to discuss. You know? And, you know, even if they don't understand, but if you can adjust with whatever they give you, fine. If you can't adjust, then find someone who understands. Right? But you have to be very careful about that, because then you have to be careful that you're not doing that just because you don't like being told what to do. You know what I'm saying? You have to balance it, because otherwise you go to the next guy, and then that doesn't work, you go to the next guy, then we understand that maybe us has a problem. You know? Because one time, there was this devotee, he would find fault in everybody. There was no one that he could get along with. Everybody was making trouble. Didn't matter if you put him in this room or that room with this one or that. Even if you had him alone, still everybody's creating trouble for him. And he would be constantly going to the authority and telling him and complaining how everybody's making all this trouble for me. You know? Like that. And this went on for a long time, because the way he explained it, it seemed really, you know, substantial in that. But then the authority, after seeing this, hearing, and starting to see things, seeing patterns, then one day the person walked in and started to say something, and the authority just looked at him and says, you don't have a problem. You know, you're coming to me with your problem, but you actually don't have a problem. You are the problem. Like that. You know. I think after that the person left. You know. But I saw him, like, I bumped into him like 20 years later. He was still the same. You know, anything you do, it was wrong. You know, it's just, you know. Does that make sense? So you also have to be very, very careful and talk with others that you know, and you know, like that, to make sure that you're right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is it should be practical that you can see that it's got done. That was the opening of Manu, was that it's according to the Shastra, it's according to authority, the example of the, you know, prominent personalities, but it also has to work for you. Right? You know, so you have to find that balance, but just make sure that you understand who you are, and then it works. So if you know, great. You know, you've been doing in other places, it works very well. You're fully engaged, just that, you get good results, you go to somewhere else, and then they try to do something different, and you explain it. You know. But you also have to see if it's not the same thing, just in, you know, simpler environment. You know what I'm saying? Okay. All the bliss of gods and men is declared by the sages to whom the Vedas was revealed to have austerity for its root, austerity for its middle, and austerity for its end. In other words, there's no such thing as not doing your duty. Right? The pursuit of sacred knowledge is the austerity of a brahmana. Protecting the people is the austerity of the kshatriya. The pursuit of his daily business is the austerity of a vaishya. And service, the austerity of a shudra. Right? So it's performing the austerity, the duties, one's austere. Right? Austerity means doing your duties. The one who does his duties, he's austere. Right? Because it mentioned previously when it was talking about the Brahmin, that he's like austere up to the, you know, extremities of his nails. Even though he's sitting there wearing a garland and everything, if a Brahmin is studying and teaching, that's the most austere thing to do. That is the perfection. So in other words, the point is that you get the benefit out of doing what's actually the most beneficial. Right? And so in other words, studying and teaching, that's the most beneficial. That's what the Brahmin should be doing. Right? Since austerity gives the results, therefore this activity must be the best because it's giving the results. It's considered the austerity. Protecting the people, that's the austerity because it gives the best result. They're pursuing their daily business for the vaishya because that's what creates the money. No one else is creating money. Right? Kshatriyas create a safe environment, shudras assist, but only vaishyas create money. Right? So that means that's what they should be doing. It is hard work, but, you know, in other words, Brahmins like to study and teach, Kshatriyas like to protect, Vaishyas like to make money. Shudras like to serve. So therefore, it's not a problem. The austerity is what they're good at, is what's natural for them, is what they like to do. Right? And if you don't like to do it, then that means you should be doing something else. You should, you know, you have to redefine who you are. You understand? If one doesn't like to do it because of he's Krishna conscious and can see the mundane elements in it, that's another thing. But then that's still with the austerity that you do it anyway because that's what you're supposed to do. Because otherwise, if you don't do it, then who's going to do it? Right? You know what I'm saying? Because if all the devotees stopped doing anything like that, then who would be doing anything? You know what I'm saying? You know, and it's fine if everyone's just sitting around and doing Harinam. Great. No problem. But if not, if you, you know, after the Harinam, then you go back to your nice house and everything like that, then that means that requires money, that requires protection, that requires knowledge. You know, so therefore, it.
That's why Krishna is praising Mahajanaka in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is praising Mahajanaka in Bhagavad Gita because he did his duty to everything.
Yes, he is good. Yeah, so he's a good king, so people appreciate it. Okay. The sages who control themselves and subsist on fruits, roots, and air survey the three worlds together with their moving and immovable creatures through their austerities alone. Medicines, good health, learning, and various divine stations are attained by austerities alone. For austerity is the means of gaining them. So even medicine, so sometimes you can't get medicine or you can't take your medicine or it's because of lack of austerity. But, you know, of course, taking medicine is austere. But good health, that comes from. Right? In other words, it's austere taking the medicines, but to actually have the medicines, that's because of previous austerity. And by taking the medicines and that, then that's why you have good health. So if you have good health now, it means you properly dealt with medicines and that in the past, you properly behaved in such a way. But if you have bad health or can't even get medicine or you tried all the medicines and it doesn't work, that just means is lack of austerity, you know, in the past. So the only real thing is then Krishna consciousness. That's the ultimate austerity. Right? Because that's what in other words, it's what you're supposed to be doing. So this is what a Brahmin's supposed to be doing, a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra is supposed to be doing. That's your start. But what's in a devotee supposed to be doing, right? Connecting those things to Krishna. Right, connecting their lifestyle to Krishna. Does that make sense? So they can both be done at once, since you have to connect something to Krishna. What is that something? So if they're a Brahmin, then it's his austerity. For the Kshatriya, it's his. For his Vaishya, it's his. For Shudra, it's his. Whatever is hard to be traversed, whatever is hard to be obtained, whatever is hard to be reached, whatever is hard to be performed, all this may be accomplished by austerities, for austerity possesses a power which is difficult to surpass. Both those who have committed mortal sins, mahapataka, and all other offenses are severally freed from their guilt by means of well-performed austerities. By means of well-performed austerities means by the proper performance of one's prescribed duties as delineated by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That's what's going to purify. Insects, snakes, moths, bees, birds, and beings bereft of and beings bereft of motion reach heaven by the power of austerities. Yeah, think of it. You're a bug. It's austere being a bug. Right? Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Snakes. Now that's real austere. You know, because if you get seen, you know, somebody's gonna whack you, you know, like that. You know, so it's like okay. After suffering the results of their previous sinful activities, these entities again obtain human birth. Because it's their duty. What's the duty of an insect?
Right? No duty.
He does his duty. No, he has his duty, right? An ant, what is he supposed to do all day?
Work.
Right? Run around looking for things to collect, right? That's all you're going like that all day. You can imagine doing that all day? You know?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah? Okay, so.
I don't like it.
No, but that's your, if it's your duty.
But doesn't duty imply that you can choose not to do your duty?
But that's only humans can do that.
Yeah, but
everybody else always does their duty.
Yeah, okay. Like
Rakshasas are always Rakshasas. They always do their Rakshasa work. You know? Birds always do their stuff. Yeah. Everybody always does their stuff. Only humans have that choice whether they want to do it or not. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Then by continuing, so in other words, they're performing, they're following God's laws. The animals are following God's laws. Then as a human, you're following your prescribed duties. That's God's law. God's law is perform your prescribed duty.
Yeah.
Right? So then they get elevated further.
Mm.
You know. But if you want the ultimate elevation, then you have to perform the duty of doing your duties for Krishna.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Whatever sin men commit by thoughts, words, or deeds, that they speedily burn away by penance. They keep penance as their only riches. Right? In other words, if you just do it to get something and then stop, but if that's your riches, means you're always performing your proper duties, so therefore the austerities are always there. The gods accept the offerings of that Brahman alone who has purified himself by austerities. And grant him to him all he desires. The Lord Prajapati created these institutes of the sacred law by his austerities alone. The sages likewise obtain the revelation of the Vedas through their austerities, right? Prajapati, so that Lord Brahma, he was austere, right? He was trying to find out who he is, and so he's sitting on his lotus meditating for 1,000 celestial years, right? So by that, therefore, then he's attained the institutes of these laws. So Krishna was pleased, and he spoke the Veda, he spoke all this knowledge to him. Right? So he gave it to his sons, and now we're hearing of this from Bhrigu. Right? Bhrigu, right? Yeah. The gods, discerning that the holy origin of this whole world is from austerity, have thus proclaimed the incomparable power of austerity. Reciting the Veda. The daily study of the Veda, the performance of the great sacrifices according to one's ability, and patience in suffering quickly destroy all guilt, even that caused by mortal sins. Mm. Right? So now this is one of those ones that basically people will not notice.
Mm.
Right? So in other words, it's the same thing. The daily study of the Veda, in other words, you're studying Shastra, right? Performance of the great sacrifices means you perform all your duties as you're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And patience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In other words, we're suffering, but we're patient in that. That will quickly destroy all guilt, mm-hmm. even mortal sins.
Because
mm-hmm. the mortal mm-hmm. sins, the external things can be quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? As a fire in one moment consumes with its bright flame the fuel that has been placed on it, even so, he who knows the Veda destroys all guilt by the fire of knowledge. Right? Vritti later is said, as a fire that has gained strength consumes even trees full of sap, even so he who knows the Veda burns out the taint of his soul which arises from evil acts. So in other words, it's by knowledge that you actually burn off, you know, all the reactions. So that's why we see is that 5 out of the 6 schools of Vedic philosophy, their process of elevation is knowledge. Right? You know, by knowledge, then you'll, and by knowledge means knowledge of the Veda. You will remove the sin, and that way you'll come to their concept of transcendental position. Right? So, and one says, just do your duties, which is the same thing. Right? In other words, but as you're applying it in the way of you know, performing your prescribed duties, you're getting all the material benefits in this way, you'll be happy. Right? The other 5 schools know that even if I do all my duties nicely, perfectly, I still won't be happy. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Means on the material platform. So therefore, performing one's prescribed duties to please Krishna, that's the only way to, one, be happy here, 2, burn off all the reactions to the material entanglement. 3, liberate yourself from the material entanglement. And 4, situate yourself permanently in the spiritual world. Right? Because no other system can actually do all that. You know, they can do a little bit of this and that, but they can never get you into the spiritual world. So their results are temporary. You might get some temporary material results like that. You may free yourself from material entanglement also temporarily, but only by but they can never get you into the spiritual world. But getting you to the spiritual world means automatically you're freed from the material entanglement. And because it's very nice to do devotional service, it was actually very comfortable here also.
Only good.
Yeah, it's only good. The penances for sins made public have been thus declared according to the law. Next, learn the penances for secret sins. Okay. 6. That's 5. A Brahmin who retains in his memory the Rig Veda is not stained by guilt, though he may have destroyed the three worlds, though he may eat the food of anyone. He who, with a concentrated mind, thrice recites the Rig Samhita, or that of the Yajurveda, or that of the Samaveda, together with the secret texts, the Upanishads, is completely freed from all sins. As a clod of dirt falling into a great lake is quickly dissolved, even so every sinful act is engulfed in the threefold Veda. The Rigs, the Yajus, formulas which differ from the former, the manifold Saman songs must be known to form the triple Veda. He who knows them is called learned in the Veda. The initial triliteral Brahman, on which the threefold sacred science is based, is another triple Veda, which must be kept secret. He who knows that is called learned in the Veda. Riti. The initial triliteral Brahman is Omkara, because it's A-U-M. Right? And being the essence of the Veda is to be given only to the deserving. The phrase, one who knows that, is referring to Vedanta, right? That is Vedanta. Mm-hmm. This is all the other stuff. In the Upanishads, this means material existence, and that means which is beyond material existence, the transcendental realm, because it mentions as this in the Upanishads. Mm-hmm. Right? So in other words, by knowing the Vedic literatures, by studying them, by practicing them, then that was what is actually going to get you actual results. That, because then you're not tainted by anything. But it says here, who retains in his memory the Rig Veda, means who's always absorbed in understanding the Shastra, and that, then they're always situated properly. Mm-hmm.
So this verse and purport being added, but it's not in the Pentameter.
This verse means 15.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So that gives the devotional perspective on it.
Okay.
Elaborately.
So this is Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 15. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvanti kartsnyena Nidharam Iva Bhakshara. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. Because the other one, you do it, then that's why it said it's like the elephant. You do the austerity, and then again it comes back. Right? But only by unalloyed devotion, then you can totally uproot it, it won't come back. So there is nothing else that will do. So why would one attempt to do other things other than devotional service? Right? In other words, one is in one's day doing so many direct activities of devotional service and indirect. So if there's a problem, then one should increase the direct. You know, and especially then avoid areas of indirect that are too distracting or that are causing the problem. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Purport. In the previous verse, Sukadev Goswami gave the example that the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree may be completely burnt to ashes by a fire, although the creepers may sprout again because the root is still in the ground. Similarly, because the root of sinful desire is not destroyed in the heart of a person who is cultivating knowledge, but who has no taste for devotion and service, there is a possibility that his sinful desires will reappear. As stated in Bhagavatam 10.14.4, Shriya Sritim Bhaktim Udasyate Vipo Klishyanti Ye Kevala Bodha Labhyate Labhaye. Speculators who undergo great labor to gain a meticulous understanding of the material world by distinguishing between sinful and pious activities, but who are not situated in devotional service, are prone to material activities. They may fall down and become implicated in fruitive activities. Right? Here's become implicated in fruitive, so it would indicate someone on the path of jnana. Right? So in here, then, even they're taking the thing of pious and impious. Pious means what is proper for liberation, impious what is not. Right? Like that. So in other words, what activities are to be done, what's not to be done, so all this analyzation, if it's being done by a non-devotee, then it will always come back up. Right? Because of the bamboo trees underneath, means there's creepers growing underneath them. And then the leaves fall off of the bamboo, and generally like once a year, they burn the leaves under the bamboo. Right? Because grass somehow or another likes being burnt. I don't know why. But you burn it, then it grows back very nicely. So bamboo is just very big grass. Right? So you burn under there, and so maybe it's the ash, I don't know, it's something about it. They really like that. So it'll burn these creepers that are underneath. But after the fire, because the roots are there, it only burns the leaves. Then you see again they sprout up. You can say it's burnt, it's gone. See, that's it, finished. They'll sprout up again. So it may fall down and become implicated in fruit of activity. So they'll again start. Or it can mean that if they're doing pious activities, they can fall down and start taking sinful activities. If one becomes attached to devotional service, however, his desires for material enjoyment are automatically vanquished without separate endeavor. You don't have to separately endeavor for them. You just engage properly in devotional service. Do that which is favorable devotional service, give up what's unfavorable, it takes care of it automatically. You don't have to separately try to become a good person. Bhakti pareshanubhavo viraktir anyatracha. If one is advanced in Krishna consciousness, material activities, both sinful and pious, automatically become distasteful to him. That is the test of Krishna consciousness. Both pious and impious activities are actually due to ignorance, because a living entity, as an eternal servant of Krishna, has no need to act for his personal sense gratification. Right? Therefore, as soon as one is reclaimed to that platform of devotional service, right? Reclaimed means that's the natural position. He relinquishes his attachment for pious and impious activities and is interested only in what will satisfy Krishna. Right? This process of bhakti, devotional service to Krishna, Vasudeva Parayana, relieves one from the reactions of all activities. So we see sometimes people are very disturbed by sinful activities, but you don't see that they're disturbed by pious activities. They're only disturbed by sinful. Right? Does that make sense? Because the one who's not interested in sinful or pious, they're only going to talk about devotional service. But someone who's interested in pious, they're going to be, you know, how you say? You know, they're going to be sinful phobic.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. So it'll be more prominent in them. They're always this and that, and that's bad, and this is bad, but they like good. You know, oh, that's so nice, and all of a sudden, but what's it got to do with Krishna? So that's the point. So devotional service means one's not interested in either. One's only interested in doing something because it's devotional service. Being a nice person is because that's what you're supposed to be in devotional service. So it's favorable for serving Krishna, because you're dealing with Vaishnavas, you're not supposed to deal with them badly. Right? So that's why you're a nice person. Otherwise, why should you be a nice person? What's the, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, how do you define nice?
Mm.
You know, so that's the difference. Okay. So end here and then we'll continue tomorrow with the rest of the report. And then, did that finish the?
Mm-hmm. Same with the chapter.
Okay, so that finished chapter 12 tomorrow. Okay, so moving right through. Okay, so we'll start with this, and then we'll continue that. Because this is sixth canto, so one of the points that's being made is prayaschitta doesn't really do anything. Right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Janita Gaura Prabhupada. There's a little more in the 12th chapter, no? That's not a small verse.
Yes.
Yeah, because this one.